Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of One Vision, the FinTech Views. This is Theo. I'm Barb McLean, and we are your host for the episode. Joining us today is Carrie Forbes, CEO of Leak Data and Technicost. Welcome to the show, Carrie.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yay. And I'm so glad we actually got a chance to meet in real life last year, thanks to Maria. It was fun. Before we start, can you tell us a little bit about Leak Data and how you end up doing what you're doing? Barb and I have been talking to so many people. Oftentimes they say they fell into banking, they fell into fintech. Some have it planned the minute they started and they left school. So curious to hear about you.
Thank you. And I love this question because League and myself are both very odd organizations. We're both approaching 50 coming up this year, which is really interesting. And I certainly did not have a linear path. So a little bit about League Data. We are cooperatively owned by, now it's 36 credit unions. They're merging quite a bit in Atlanta, Canada. Although we just recently, in our 50 years, did an acquisition of Technicost, which is a loan system, and mainly for growth. When we look at just the scale, I know everybody here knows that technology is expensive, but our purpose is really, we came to be in the 1970s, basically to start processing transactions, and began in one central, and it grew from there. We're now the CIO for the Atlanta Credit Union, so we have a dual role. It's not really just about the technology and implementation. There's a bit of a strategic piece that we play because our credit unions are so small. So we do a lot, again, with regulators, but also it's really about looking after the footprint from cybersecurity in addition to privacy and all those other things that is too complex for them to manage. So that's really our evolution. It sort of has, over the years, has kind of grown depending on the needs. And today we're about a few weeks away to kick off our biggest transformation ever, which is going digitally native on our core bank. So that's been a nail-biting four-year adventure. But I came to League in 2014, almost 10 years ago, and I didn't know the organization existed. I was actually headhunted, which was really interesting. And that's because my hat was a little bit of what they were looking for at the time. I'm an accidental technologist. So when I was in school, I went to a university, I studied English and theater and psychology. And that was, I thought musical theater would probably be where I ended up. But you know, the 90s were rough, especially in Halifax, where I'm from. So I figured I was going to end up going to Toronto and doing like everybody else. And then I thought I was going to do actually radio and television journalism was something that was on my list. And anyway, long story, I needed to work when I graduated school. And it just so happened that several of the large banks opened up contact centers in Atlanta, Canada, which this will tie into, I think, our story later. So we, a whole group of us young new grads, ended up in these call centers because it had salaries. They were, you know, we were like, hey, we've got a job. And I figured I'd do it for a year and then hightail it out of there. But I ended up there for 10. And that's how I got into fintech, because we were launching internet banking for the very first time. We were a card center, so we were a Visa center. So I spent 10 years deep in the cards processing and all of that. We did everything from fraud, you name it. Plus, we did mortgages and investments because we were the one-stop shop. So over the years, after I left that, I ended up going to government for a while. And my other hat, which is really about leadership, is where this was born. So that's my passion, is people and growth. So I've done a lot around change, culture change, transformational change, and how you do that with people and in organizations. And those two blended was what they were looking for in League and how I landed there. So it's been a wild journey, and every day is different. But I could go on, but we only have so much time.
That is fun. I didn't remember the people growth focus because it was around, was it around the new year? You posted a poem.
Yes. Yes.
I was like, wait, you write poems too? That was interesting. And talk about career change. I thought I was going to be a geologist. So there you go. Hey, we all started in a curious way and we all ended up where we are right now. So you did mention about credit unions and how you guys are also the CIO for Atlantic Credit Unions and how they're small and they need a little bit of help. So we know you're super passionate about that as well as your local communities. What are some of the unique challenges that face the credit unions in Atlantic Canada today, and how can they evolve with technology while meeting the demands of the members and keeping the human touch? Because that's always the intricate things, isn't it? Credit unions is always about being in touch with the members, knowing their needs, being there for them. Sometimes when we think about layering technology and digital, it feels inhuman.
Yes, it sure can. And you know, when I look at where Atlantic Canada is, it's not dissimilar to many cooperative systems, particularly smaller ones that are, I would say, in smaller markets that are serving more grassroots community needs. And I think that's one of the things that differentiates Atlantic. And I see Barb nodding. I'm thinking, you know, I think about where you're from in the prairie regions, very similar. I would say if we swap wheat and fish, we're almost the same in some ways. But I think though, those areas, and particularly Atlantic, we actually, that time that I graduated was pivotal for a major, major upset to our economy. So in the early 1990s, our fisheries collapsed. And what that meant is they closed the cod fishery, which was the lifeblood of a lot of Atlantic Canada's economy. And that created a lot of churn in our region, and a lot of young people went away. So you ended up in this situation where you're dealing with high cost of, got a lot of older people, yet raising, you know, school, all these things cost, but yet our primary earning years were starting to dwindle away. So credit unions through this period also had evolved an older membership. So what we've seen is that the, you know, how you start to bring those newer generations through, especially the 90s and then into the 2000s, when technology really started to change, we started to fall behind. So they had, you know, they were comfortable though with the status quo. Well, our members are great and we're still high touch. But disruption, I think, in addition to this, I'll say this economic and demographic challenge, all sort of swirl together. Probably by the mid-2000s, we start to see more of an impact on the strategies of credit unions and what they're attempting to do. So I found that technology was such a barrier, because the cost to truly compete in your region is really high to differentiate. Most credit unions had to just get to table stakes with what our banks are doing. So do we have the e-transfer service? Just getting that up and running alone is a lot, on top of trying to make it more of a credit union face to it. So for a long time, we've been chasing, I find, as we go. So we have this technical debt issue, and then it's just continually being, I'd say, chipped away at when we add cybersecurity concerns, and then you add all the compliance and regulatory and the things coming like open banking. It's like you're constantly chasing your tail, especially on older tech. So this is why what we're doing today to try to really get digital is so crucial to our strategy. But then let's fast forward a little bit to the pandemic, and things started shifting again. And now we've got some growth, but that growth is a real challenge, because our economy and our communities have, you know, sort of, I guess, you know, the presence over time of credit unions started to dwindle in regions. Now we have large banks leaving. And so we've got this dual problem of, we're trying to catch up on the technology to make it really attractive for those here. But at the same time, we have new opportunities as banks are pulling out of the region. So I'll just mention, like, the island of Newfoundland, that's our furthest province. I'd swear, like, there are probably about 12 towns now that will be without any banking services. Huge opportunities for credit unions, huge for us to get in there, but scale and trying to build that quickly is really challenging, because we just don't have the same dollars or access to resources as the large banks. So it's a multi-pronged kind of approach, especially in Atlantic. I think we have a huge opportunity to seize new tech to address how do we start to fill those gaps, but it's going to take a lot of, I'll say, cooperation and collaboration, which is the irony of the whole thing for credit unions. And that's really the big opportunity. So those are, I'd say, that the key ones that I see. And if we miss this innovation turn, then I think we're going to struggle for another 20 or 30 years to really build on some of the strengths that this region really has outside of its traditional, I guess, resource economy. So
you're talking about, I think, a generational opportunity that's in front of you right now. And this is actually, I think, the part of why I was so excited to have you here today, is to tell, certainly in Canada, but probably globally, I think people have no clue really how great the fintech scene is in Atlantic Canada. So I'm speaking to all of you down there in downtown Toronto and anywhere else that probably, you know, maybe didn't even really know where Halifax was or where Newfoundland is. And so I this was the part of the discussion I was most excited about to have you here. So let's talk about fintech innovation in the Atlantic and what gets you the most excited about that.
Oh, I think what's great, I love this question, Barb. We're quiet and we don't, and this is one of our problems over time. And it's one of the things that we have to get better at as credit unions, but particularly in Atlantic Canada, is that often we're twofold. One, we're kind of humble. Like people don't want to pop up and say, hey, we did this. And a good example is Leak Data with probably one of our largest, I'd say, fintech success stories in Canada, which was Verafin. So Verafin as an AML AI-based tool that they got started up in 2003 in Newfoundland and Labrador. No other banks would look at them. But our credit union said, hey, listen, these guys from Memorial University have created this amazing tool. What can we do? And so this is what I love about what we can do as cooperatives and in this space is come together in this collaboration and say, how do we make this work? And that's really important because a lot of times people don't understand that most of this risk-taking at this level is what it takes for a fintech to get off the ground. So when we look at what League, our role, we haven't just been, I'd say, providing, you know, technology to credit unions. We've actually been helping to build and instill this fintech community and being part of that, where also those are economic opportunities in our own area. So what's very interesting about this, and I didn't know it while I was in it, but back in that time frame in the 1990s, when the banks were doing outsourcing to Atlantic Canada, this was actually by design. So what happened was in the province of New Brunswick, there was a very strong premier, Frank McKenna. And Frank, I mean, he swept that province every time, and he was such a visionary. He actually put broadband all through the province of New Brunswick in the 1990s to set them up. They actually started out, they have a big cybersecurity practice. But what his vision was, is he said, look, if we start learning this stuff in our region, we'll build these skills of the future. Now, back in the day, we were like, we're just call center people. That's what we didn't see ourselves as fintech people, even though we had to learn some of the code. We had to learn all kinds of things. We were just, you know, doing it. But what was happening, and now we see that blossoming of a lot of this, I'd say this seeding that happened back then, lots of different companies. So what you tend to see in Atlantic Canada is a focus on the back end, because that's where our strengths are, i.e. around RegTech. You see it in cybersecurity. You see it a lot in back end processing and payments, because that's primarily where we were taking all those calls. So now when I look at the region, and we've got some partners, and actually we just hosted last week a round table with fintechs in our region with Senator Colin Deakin and also Abraham Tashin, just to talk about what does this mean for us economically? What are the potential and possibilities? And I think in a region like ours, one of the benefits is we are small and it's very collaborative, and people do like to get together and talk. And that's what it's going to take to build that community. And that's really underway right now. So I look at and again, I'm very proud of Atlantic Canadian. I think I'm eighth generation in Halifax, something silly like that. But I think the key, and I always say this, is that we're really good at weathering storms here. We've been through a lot of hurricanes, a lot of snows, et cetera, but even the economic storms, even from the time of Confederation, that's some of the spirit that I see that makes our people like, we can do this, we can tackle it, we'll figure it out. So I feel that spirit right now is amongst us. And as we start to identify what's here, the potential is huge. So that gets me super excited about where we're going.
So let's then maybe zoom out for a second and take a more national Canadian view. Now that some of the larger credit unions in Canada have a national charter, how do you think that impacts the cooperative principle of cooperatives helping cooperatives? So, you know, for the first times, credit unions based in, say, Metro Vancouver or Saskatchewan or Ontario, notionally, they're now direct companions in the Atlantic region. What does that change in terms of the philosophy of how credit unions work together, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question, Barb. It's a controversial one too, but it's a good one. And I think for us in Canada, the way that we've been traditionally structured is unique to some other countries as well. You typically don't see credit unions managed or oversaw at a provincial or state level. Like it's a bit different. So that's created some it always creates uniquenesses when people come to Canada to deal with all of that level of regulation alone. But on top of it, there's been almost this, you know, kind of us them thing of like us against the banks, until now we can compete in that same way. So I think it just depends on the philosophy of the credit union and what they're going to market with. So as I look at, there's about three right now, that one being Uni, they were the first. They're actually French and they're in Atlantic Canada. So they've been in our backyard now for 6-7 years in the federal, but they haven't really made a move, because I think part of it is they're trying to figure out what is our go-to-market outside of our current group. And that's not easy necessarily to compete against, especially if your whole shtick is, well, we're local. Well, how local are you? And then there's something very interesting about that. The differences amongst French language in Atlantic Canada can be very fascinating. Okay. So we have Acadian French, that's the oldest in Canada. And a lot of that, they find it very difficult to work with folks from, say, Quebec French. There's not always a natural alignment just because of language. So people might assume there's a natural market, but it depends on, you know, even within our own, sometimes those linguistic styles can be so different. It just depends. That's one example. But I do think there is a general question about, if you go national and you started in a particular place, how does that community see itself in your national brand? Does it still reflect, or are we into a new space where national credit unions have to represent something a little bit bigger than just where they started from, for example? So now that's my very diplomatic answer. But what I will say for my own personal is, I do think it eats away at the idea of I'll call local governance. And you start to get into one of the challenges is, now you're going to have a head office. Where is that head office? And then how does decision governance start to flow? So until we see that a little bit down the road, my take is that that's going to be very challenged, and that you may see reaction from folks at the local level to say, we don't feel as connected to the movement here, perhaps in there. Now, again, it's early days and we haven't seen a whole lot of traction of that across, but I think that would be my concern anyway. So
I'm learning from the two of you. I must admit, there is not much I understand nor know about Atlantic FinTech. I got a crash course last year when I met with Carrie and Maria. Now I'm continuing to learn. It's fascinating. It's interesting, isn't it, when we put assumptions to things. I often think, because I remember, Barb, when we first started talking quite a few years ago now, you were telling me about digital connectivity and how it is very focused and concentrated on certain regions. And that was one big learning lesson. I'm like, oh, right. Because if you think about it, a big swath of the middle part of Canada. And now I'm learning something else about credit union. So thank you. So as we continue the learning journey, last year, the Canadian government said, and they promised, to develop and implement a legislative framework for consumer-driven banking that will enable consumers to securely and confidently access their financial data, and in turn, safely use services that can help them improve their financial outcomes. Now, from open banking to open finance and beyond, I am very curious to hear your thoughts, because Barb, I remember, was it like maybe a year and a half ago now, one of the episodes you said, open banking, it's not happening soon.
Still not a thing. I don't know. You were hosting them last week. I feel like you've got the up-to-date notes here for us, Carrie.
Well, I think the funny part is we were hosting the folks that were around it, but are now just pushing those who are supposed to implement it. But I think my concern is they have pushed already the actual deliverable to fall. It was supposed to be spring, but now they've pushed it to fall. So what I do think is interesting is I follow this journey. And having spent time working for a provincial government and knowing a little bit about how government bureaucracy and the will of the public kind of works, I do think my concern is that we're behind and this government's scrambling now to catch up to particularly the US. And I, you know, for me, it was really telling that all of a sudden we had two key things, and we actually talked about this last week, two key things that we think really set the agenda forward. The first was the US announcing, we're taking, you know, a legislative approach. We're going to start moving forward. Now, that right away, and I hate to say it, but our government often gets shamed by doing things, you know? Oh, well, we'll wait and see what our biggest trading partner does. So let's face it, there's some element of that. And I don't think that's necessarily just because they're sitting there not wanting to do it. I think they have a tremendous amount of pressure and that they're holding back, like, what are we going to do? You know, our large banks, I won't speak for them, but we know they have their own interests and their own ways of doing. So I feel like we've been dragging until hopefully some magical market solution was just going to land on their lap, and that's just not going to happen. So I think, you know, we've got to act now before we're way behind is number one. But the second was actually the Conservative Party put a members bill in to basically say we need to get this done, and made it also shortly after this. So I think those two pressure points kind of lit a fire under our government to act. So we have at least that rolling. Now, what they come back with in the fall, we have to hold them to, will really dictate, I think, the details about where this goes. I do think for us, and it's so interesting, and I keep hearing, well, we're going to learn from other jurisdictions, and we're going to, like, we just got to get going. But I do think that we probably will be facing an election next year in this country. And that's the big question now, is this going to be election proof? Are we going to, you know, is this going, you know, if the government takes actions, or will they just kick the can down the road a little bit more until that time? I think that's part of my concern. But I do think there's enough, when we look at those around this, even from the other parties, there actually has been enough awareness of what it means and what that I think there'll be enough internal pressure to keep the foot on the gas. It will take, though, I think those of us in advocating for it and that pressure on and on and on until we get to where we need to be. Now, I find it really funny that a big reason why we are as well is the general public doesn't have a good grounded sense of what this means. And so that's part of the reason they've decided to call it consumer directed finance as opposed to open banking. And that, I can't put stress enough. I do think that's a really major problem. It's something I have mentioned throughout some of the work they did to gather information. If people that you're only consulting with, or just a small subset with an expertise around this, were really missing the big picture, and that can come to bite us later. And that's kind of what they found in their research. I won't name names, but we even have a credit union who's very skeptical of this and has made it very public. And so when that is out there, we don't even have consensus within perhaps our community around what it means. That's problematic for the government, especially when you want to get down to what does it mean to the citizen. And then the question is, how much of it really matters to the citizen, really? They just want convenience and quick and whatever. So what are we telling them? Anyway, so those are just a few of, I'd say, the key pieces around this that where my concerns lie. And I think it's, you know, in typical, it's going to come down to the bureaucrats now and really getting into that language that they put forward for us to understand what does this truly mean and how we operate. And yeah, so we'll wait to see how it goes. But I think I tend to be, when anything government related, a little bit skeptical, always out of the gate until it's done. So
I think we need to circle back end of the year and do a prediction.
Yes.
2025 with old. All right, before we let you go, Carrie, if you were to leave a word of advice for fintech founders in the Atlantic Canada region, what would that be?
I love this question. One of the gaps I think that we have, and it's something I'm trying to kind of work in our region, is we have a lot of accelerators. We have lots of places for folks to go. Nothing that's, and this has been part of the Atlantic fintech journey that we're trying to close the gap on, but really get out and network with the financial institutions and not just the large banks. I think that's part of the challenge, is sometimes, you know, it's great to get out and get mentorship, but generally you're going to be, if you can solve the problems at the credit union level, it can offer a lot more insight. One, they're going to learn a lot more about the industry. We can likely take them and show them lots of things that it's a slow process to figure out on your own. So working with credit unions, or even I'll call it other types of FIs, one, to figure out kind of where that fintech founder's oriented. Not, you know, you can't be everything to everyone, and you're not going to build a massive platform that does everything. And I think that's some of the challenge that we see, is helping with expectation and what problems am I trying to solve? I think it's understanding that the most significant things that can really lead to true innovation are some of the ugly things that nobody wants to deal with, those problems, but they're the foundation of how we help. And then from that learning, sometimes is where some of their future state and new products will come from. But you got to get into the weeds and into the messy parts, especially in the Canadian system, because it is very complex. But that can help save a lot of pain, a lot of design that just goes to the wayside. And even just down to, is this a space you want to play in? FinTech, as you know, is very, very different. It can be hugely exciting, but it's also the place where a lot more pressure happens, whether that's coming from cybersecurity, from regulatory, all those things. And it's not for everybody. So it's you know, get your hands dirty in it. Get to know some of the folks that work, not just the retail side, right? Not just that, but all across the organization. And yeah, it's great to connect with other fintechs in that space as well for their learnings. Those are the things we see, because we've seen a lot of up and coming, great idea. They invested wholehearted and didn't realize, no, that can't, that's not going to work in the Canadian system for these reasons. That's a really sad day for them. So getting in early and not just assuming you can take something that worked in a different vertical. We often see telecom and retail. Oh, that worked really well here, until we get to some of the challenges that we have in our very, very complicated and at times COBOL-based systems. And that's the way it is. You're dealing with so many different elements. So
I feel like that's the same set of advice we can give to founders practically anywhere. Network, yeah. Talk to people, get your hands dirty, and don't assume. You did offer us a new one, though. I don't often hear people say, are you sure this is what you want?
Yes.
Oftentimes people just jump straight in. But it is good to think, reflect, and learn. So thank you so much for your time today, Kerry. We enjoyed it, and to look forward to meeting you again in person.
Yes.
And for the rest of our listeners, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of One Vision. We will talk to you all next week.